Welcome to the Arendt Podcast Luxembourg, our podcast channel that explores the latest legal, regulatory, and market updates in Luxembourg and beyond. Discover our podcast series, all about private debt, and listen to what our experts and guest speakers have to say about the latest trends, opportunities, and challenges in the private debt market.
So welcome, everybody, to this new edition of our Private Debt Series podcast. I am Carl de la Chapelle, and today I'm very happy to welcome Rob Shaw, partner and CFO of Abera Capital. With Rob, we will discuss a bit the most recent evolutions on the private debt mid-market sector, what you, Rob, are seeing and what you're currently working on, and the topics that keep your organization moving. But before touching on the topics we have prepared, Rob, could you maybe give us a few introductory words on Abera and as well on yourself?
Sure, no problem, Carl. Look, thank you very much for having me. It's great to be here on my very first podcast. In terms of Abera, we started the business back in 2016 with a focus on the lower end of the bid market in what we define as core Western Europe, which is countries like the UK, France, Germany, Benelux, and we've recently done a couple of deals also in the Nordic region. And the reason for the focus on the low end of the market, which is what we define as businesses, growing businesses, really with EBITDAs north of 3 million euros up to about 10 million euros, is there we think we can get the best risk return, there we can get the best covenants, and there we also see the largest number of deals. And really what that means is that we can really focus on credit selection, and finding the best deals that meet our return criteria. And since we started Abera, I think one of the developments in the direct lending market in Europe is our ability to convince LPs, convince market participants that there really is a difference between deals that are done and the structure of those deals that are done at the upper end of the mid-market and the deals that we're focused on, which is deals at the lower end of the mid-market. The business itself now manages commitments of 2.6 billion. We have a team of 36 people. We're in the process of raising our third fund. And I think that's just a demonstration really of, you know, the interest that we've managed to create at the lower end of the mid-market and certainly LP appetite for, you know, what is a, you know, risk per or return rather per unit leverage, a really attractive end of the market. So that's a little bit about Abera. In terms of myself, I'm partner and CFO, as you suggested, and qualified as a chartered accountant in Australia, and really have just enjoyed being part of the business from the very beginning and growing the business really from inception.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Rob. And you were mentioning a few seconds ago that you're in the middle of the fundraising right now. Maybe looking back on the last 12 to 18 months in your specific market, what have you seen in terms of fundraising? And also as a related point, how was the deal stream?
Mm-hmm. Sure. I mean, in terms of fundraising, I think there's been a few. If I look back, even beyond that time frame, Carl, that you described, fundraising's had challenging periods. You think of the onset of COVID at the beginning of 2020. Even at the beginning of last year with the onset of, you know, the Ukraine war. Beginning of this year, you know, concerns around inflation. So, I think fundraising has had its challenges. I think this first half has probably been slower than what all market participants would have liked. I think what we're seeing is, I suppose, LPs looking at alternatives, looking at maybe more liquid asset classes, where they see potentially higher returns, albeit, higher returns with that comes potentially higher risk. And what we're hoping to see going forward really is, as markets begin to settle and particularly as some of the volatility around the direction of inflation and the understanding of how that inflation might ease, hopefully what we will start to see during the second half is investors confident really to to commit to, you know, private markets in general, but in particular to the fund that we're currently raising. And I think also, you know, we're starting to see that unravel and sort of market conditions ease slightly on the deal front. You know, we have a weekly pipeline call, and I think, you know, there's more processes now coming to market. I think, you know, concerns around, you know, valuations or, you know, have eased slightly. And I think potentially also private equity sponsors, you know, although they were cautious, obviously, because the cost of debt has increased, they're really trying to get their head around about how they can get deals done, and, you know, whether that's with, you know, potentially a bigger equity check, or maybe a more conservative financing structure, at least initially. So I think although things, processes that we're in, both on the deal side and also on the fundraising side, have been slower, and I think they've been slower really across the market, our expectation, our hope is that some of those, some of the activity then starts to come back in H2, as we've, you know, as we've seen in previous years as well.
And also seeing the first signs of that coming to reality already?
Yeah, we are on the deal side, certainly. And, you know, some LPs also that maybe have pressed pause towards the end of this year, beginning of this year, where those processes are now coming back to life. And, you know, I think what we'll start to see overall is a, you know, which is always the case really in our market anyway, is a much busier Q3 and Q4 as we roll towards the end of 2023.
Okay, well, thank you for that. And kind of a related question, during this period and currently, how do you see your portfolio, the Abra portfolio, behaving in the current environment?
So we've done a lot of work on the portfolio. I mean, it's a debt fund. The worst thing you can do is lose money. And I think from a risk management perspective, you know, we've spent a lot of time on the portfolio. Now, you know, we certainly look at the portfolio every month, and we review, you know, the performance of the portfolio every month, and that rolls into a quarterly review process that we then, you know, feedback to investors. But I think what's clear is we've gone the extra mile, and we've done this also before as well, where we do a portfolio stress test, you know, where we take a pretty dim view of, you know, employment costs, dim view of overall input costs, whether that's raw material costs, whether that's employee costs, for example, whether that's freight costs, all the things that could kind of bring a portfolio on unstuck, a portfolio company unstuck, we stress. And I think what's come out of that is that, you know, it's given us areas to focus on, you know, potentially also areas for us to engage with management teams and private equity sponsors on. And knowing that it is a sort of a worst case scenario, because although we stress the costs, we don't look at, for example, you know, headcount reduction, you know, when we stress it. So it is we double down on the stress, I suppose, yeah, when we're looking at that. But I think it highlights areas, for example, where, you know, increased input costs can't be passed through to consumers, for example, or where, you know, for a period of time, you know, cash might become an issue for a particular portfolio company. And I think what that means for us, and I think, you know, it's one of the benefits of, you know, being also in the lower end of the mid market, is you can get this access to management companies. You know, you're probably in most instances well engaged with the private equity sponsor. So, you know, I think you know, being able to do that type of analysis, I think, is really helpful to understand where potentially risk areas are within the portfolio, but equally how might you deal with those risk areas? Because, you know, on the one hand, obviously, you know, the higher rates, all our loans are floating rate loans, is, you know, good for overall fund returns. You know, you can't forget the impact that might have on the underlying cash flows of the business. And I think, you know, we feel we're in a pretty good position of knowing where potential risk are in the portfolio as a result of that stress testing analysis.
Right. Right. Yeah. Thank you for these very interesting insights, Rob. Maybe widening the angle a bit. If we're looking now at the next year or year and a half, what do you see in your industry as the main opportunities and challenges?
You know, I think for us the overall macro environment for firms like ours, in Europe is really positive. I mean, I think, themes running through the industry really for the last 10 years have been true. You know, you've had the regulatory change, you've also had banks pulling back, and we've seen that, particularly with the most recent stress on the systems, banks pulling back as they have done previously. So I think, overall there's still a really good opportunity for direct lending firms like ours to grow. And I don't think in terms of the overall market fundamentals as a market opportunity, I think it's obviously still very attractive. I think, what's interesting now is, it really is a fantastic time to deploy. For senior secured credit, you're getting double digit returns. I think that's, that's something that, particularly in the low interest rate environment that we've had for so long, no one ever really expected. I think that has to be tempered slightly. We've seen, across the board, key economies, slowing down a little bit, and you can't ignore that. And, some of the headwinds that, higher inflation brings. Now, let's hope, inflation, continues its current trajectory. It might be stickier than perhaps market participants currently think, who knows. But I think, in some senses, participants, whether that be private equity sponsors, funds like ourselves or LPs, need to become accustomed to operating in a higher rate environment. I think we're just going through the first iteration of that, but certainly I think for a long time, certainly pre-COVID, the thinking was, has private credit in Europe really been tested? And I think, as an industry, we stood the COVID test, and hoping also that, we can withstand, the current challenges, because I think that, that's only good for the industry to prove its worth through the cycle. And hopefully the resilience that comes of that, cements the asset class, really as a genuine alternative asset class for, big institutional investors. And hopefully that just enables us to, attract more capital and continue to deploy in a very disciplined way as we, as we have done really since inception.
Yeah, and in this market, so then full of opportunities for the coming month, I would like to talk a bit about your own positioning. So you mentioned earlier that your key differentiator, which is to be focused on a smaller cap player, was something that was working better and better. Could you please maybe elaborate a bit on that and on all what you foresee to differentiate from your other competitors, mm-hmm. and generally how you want to work your positioning in the market in the next year or so?
Mm-hmm. I think when we, LPs certainly asked this question, why is a pair different, and how do you compete in a market like this? And I think where we end up on that question is really one. Is one key component, although there are others, but one key component is two financial covenants, and two financial covenants that do work. And what that means for us is that it means that we can gauge quite quickly if the business starts to flatline or in some way underperforms. Mm-hmm. We can get around the table very quickly. And I think that's really important, because it means that we can really understand from management, from the private equity sponsor, what's going on within the business. And it gives us a chance to really lift the lid on the businesses that we've lent to. Now, we do look to situations where we can generate higher returns. So that might be, a buy and build strategy, for example, of a business, and that brings with it, additional risk with respect to integration potentially. Or we look at situations potentially also with a carve out, and carve out risk is there always, and we're willing to research and understand that risk, and it means that though the covenants themselves, the two financial covenants themselves, really need to bite if things don't work. And what that's meant across the portfolio is that we can get around the table, and I think that's very important. I think generally though, we're quite conservative in our structures. So, if we look at the portfolio, it's sub 4x levered, LTVs around 40%, certainly, and that, when you look at some of the metrics and you overlay that with two financial covenants and you look at the pricing that we're getting, I think it starts to really resonate. And I think that's really what we're trying to do here is, put ourselves at the end of the market. We see a lot of the deals, and, the really good news for us is, we've done a couple of deals in the Nordics, which is a very difficult area to crack. We've done a couple of deals in Ireland, and we continue also to push in our core jurisdictions, the UK, France and Germany. But it there's enough deal flow out there for us to be able to get the covenant package we want and get the conservative structure that we want to make sure that if businesses do underperform, there's sufficient headroom for us, as I said before, really to engage with the company and to sit down with them and really understand what's going on. And I think the more we build a track record at this end of the market and the more we really build a story around, the companies that we've invested in, you can start to see why this end of the market, makes a lot of sense. Yeah. And I think probably one of the other things just to mention is if you look at, our overall fund returns, they're really consistent across fund vintages. And I think that's a key component here is that because of the depth of the market, consistency of returns is really also another feature.
Yeah. Thank you for that. Rob, to wrap up, because I'm also mindful that we're already almost at the end of this, but this is really interesting. I just wanted to have your views on a couple of popular topics that are also going wider than your own industry, but Apera must have a thought on this. The first one would be in terms of fundraising. So, the flavor of the day is with retailization. What is the approach of Apera with this respect now and going forward? Is this something you're looking into?
Yeah, it's certainly on the list, but with all the competing priorities, it's not something we've invested a huge amount of time in, but it's certainly on the radar, and actually with some of the regulatory developments that we're seeing come out of Luxembourg, I think it's something for us to keep an even keener eye on over the next 6 to 12 months to see how we can benefit.
Okay. And of course, the ESG, how do you approach ESG? Does it have an important impact on your strategy, on your sourcing, and on the terms of your deals? Or do you see that rather, do you take this rather from the angle of a mere regulatory topic?
No, we take ESG very seriously. And quite early on, we formed our own ESG committee and developed an investment process around ESG. And certainly, as part of Fund 3, we chose to designate that as an Article 8 fund. And so ESG is important, and actually, a lot of that is driven by the importance it holds with our LP base. And we're seeing that more and more. So we do decline deals on ESG grounds, and that's something we're quite relaxed about doing. I think more and more investors want to understand, how we factor in or embed ESG into our core investment decision-making process. And, let's be honest, environmental concerns, sustainability concerns, governance concerns, they all feed into credit risk, right? So we need to, if we want to really understand a credit, we need to understand also what it means or what the risks are with respect to ESG. And I think, it is as much a regulatory topic as it is a credit topic, as it is a, importance from a social and governance perspective. So,
right. Yeah. And I have one last question for you, Rob, with respect to Luxembourg more specifically now. How do you see the Luxembourg market for funds, and what are your, being very honest, what are your views on what works well and what could be improved in Luxembourg?
Mm-hmm. So we had an understanding of Luxembourg, even in my previous experience, but also in Klaus, one of the other founders' experience as well. So Luxembourg for us was almost like a default location because that's where we had the best knowledge. And I think it's worked really well. I mean, I think, investors certainly understand Luxembourg. If they're not in a Luxembourg fund, they're probably in a private equity fund or another private debt fund that's based in Luxembourg. And I think that helps, that core understanding from our perspective, from the manager's perspective, but also from the LP's perspective, I think is really helpful. Obviously the marketing passport is super helpful. We still use a third party AFIM, and that relationship, both in terms of setting up the fund, getting the market passport, and subsequently with respect to, portfolio and risk management, works very well. I think, obviously finding people, keeping people is really difficult in Luxembourg, and we've seen that impact us largely indirectly, but to a certain extent directly as well, because we do have a team in Luxembourg as well. So I think, overall that, there is a lot going for Luxembourg. I think it might have been slightly caught off guard by the sheer growth in alternative assets probably over the last 10 or 15 years. And I think probably that, although there's that risk, it's undeniable that there's a, there's an infrastructure there. I think, the CSSF is being pragmatic on everything from, crypto to, the retailization of private markets. So I think, there's a lot going for it. I think probably people is the constraint, because there has been such a huge demand of late.
Rob, thank you very much for all of these thoughtful answers and this great discussion. As always, it's a pleasure. So on behalf of the podcast, thank you very much for having participated. And we will talk to the other listeners at the next occasion for our next podcast, which should be in a couple of weeks. Again, Rob, thank you very much.
Fantastic, Carl. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. We hope you found it interesting. If you would like more information about our private debt expertise, we invite you to visit our website, www.arendt.com. If you don't want to miss our latest episode, please feel free to subscribe to our podcasts available on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify.